Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Deplorable Nation. I'm your host, Deplorable Janet, and today I have one of my beautiful new friends, recent acquaintance, done his show twice, introduced by my lovely bestie, Miss Heidi from Unfiltered Rise. Love him to pieces. If you guys do not know this guy, you're going to want to watch their show, get in touch, because he does some very mind-blowing things. So, welcome, my friend from Paranoia Radio. How are you, darling?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm super duper excited about this. So, for people who don't know you, Introduce yourself a little bit so my listeners get a sense of who you are and what you do.
Well, first of all, I want to thank the Lord for allowing me to be here today. And I want to thank every single one of you for allowing me to enter your space. Thank you so much, Deplorable Janet from Deplorable Nation, the best podcast after mine. Okay. My name is Trebles Garcia, and I am the humble host of Paranormal Radio Podcast. And we, the show revolves around paranormal activity, conspiracy theorists. I am a MAGA Trump supporter, and I am LA's best Latino conspiracy theorist. I am Conspiracy Poppy in Los Angeles. So make sure you check us out at paranormalradio.com. And you could catch all our episodes absolutely free on our podcast platforms. You could watch also our video unedited, unbothered, and unfiltered episodes on paranoidvideo.com. Thank you.
Fantastic. So how did you go about starting your show? Like what piqued your interest the most in being able to start that?
You know, I'd love to share this story with you guys. I was very young in high school, and I found out that the world is not how we think it is. There's more than meets the eye. And I was a very troubled teenager. And I guess instead of finding drugs, I did find drugs, obviously, but instead of finding just drugs and parties and women and gangs, I started diving into the all-seeing eye and chemtrails. And I was just a teenager when I found out that, Dick, there's a lot of things that are happening around the world that are not how they seem to be preached, they seem to be told. And a lot of the things that you see in a movie are repetitive in life, as if they're telling you something in a movie and then out of nowhere, oh yeah, it happened, like that one movie, remember? Like, no, not like the movie. They told you what was gonna happen, and so forth and so forth. So 3 years ago, I reconnected with my best friend, Big Tank, the best co-host in the planet. He is the co-host at Paranoid Radio Podcast. And we started this little adventure where we were talking about conspiracy theories. And sooner or later, I found a passion for it. I lost interest in doing coke. I lost interest in drinking every day. I lost interest in chasing women. I lost interest in watching movies. I lost interest in listening to the radio station. Like, I'm on my car and I'm driving into silence. I enjoy the silence, if anything. I can listen to my five senses are all running at the same time. I'm high off life. And that's when the show really revolved. It has opened many doors for me. And I found out that I've connected with so many people at so many high frequencies, for example, you. And I was able to make friends around the country and around the world. And now people are listening to us, and we are growing steadily. And we challenge reality one episode at a time. It's one of my passions, and I'm grateful to be here.
You know what? That's fantastic, that the way that you put that, because that's so important for people to find some kind of passion that they're, you know, can get involved in or wrapped up in to take them away from all the other bad things that they should not be doing.
Yeah.
So that's a beautiful testimony, my friend.
Thank you.
Like, seriously, it is, because there's not a lot of people that are lucky enough or vulnerable enough to share.
Or like that. Economically stable enough, or have the courage enough to push off people. Because what happened in 2020, if you allow me to just add real quick.
Sure.
That we started in 2020 before COVID, like right after COVID hit. But COVID wasn't the reason why we jumped the gun. It was kind of like the Beirut explosion. And I don't know if you remember how the big firework thing blew up, and then Beirut, and then Kobe died back to back, and there was a sequence there. That's what really pushed us off the edge. And so we found ourselves. And Tank, well, you know, he's a normie, and I'm the conspiracy head. I'm the MAGA Republican Trumper. So yeah.
So do you guys like, have you known each other for a long time?
I've known Tank for 18 years.
Gotcha. So you guys kind of like grew up together then.
Yeah, Big Tank and I partied enough. We went through sorrows. He's seen my real family before I got adopted. We've got into fights together. We shared the back of a cop car together countless times, dude. This guy and I, like, it's a very passionate relationship. As a matter of fact, I just got off a fight with him before recording with you. It's funny how this works out. But I'm able to speak very great about him.
I think that's beautiful, though, that we were just discussing that here home yesterday, how our son is still friends with people that he went to, like, kindergarten with, mm-hmm. you know, and he's an adult now. He's in college and whatever. And I was like, it's nice to have, you know, those lifelong friends. Mm-hmm. I don't have that because, like, everybody went their separate ways and, you know, like, some people disappeared or, you know, they get wrapped up in their own life and they don't contact you anymore or whatever. So I think it's beautiful when you still have that connection from somebody that you've known for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially being troublemakers together.
You know, we partied together a lot. We used to go, oh, man, that kid and I. But, you know, we did lose connection. He got married. I became a raver. And we lost connection, and we just connected about 4 years ago and connected again pretty hard, like it doubled up. So he got a kid, and then I had my second child, and he was like, yo, you know, I want to be a YouTuber. I'm like, dude, I'm the fucking best. You're talking to like a legend in the making. He's like, yo, let's go. That's what we're doing. We are here.
I love that, though. I think that's beautiful. So today we have a very interesting topic to cover, and I'm sure a lot of parents can identify with this, or know other parents who can identify with what we are going to talk about, which is imaginary friends, and what that can possibly mean, what they are, and other things that could be actually behind your child's imaginary friend. And I know you've been doing a show on this. So let's go with you first. Tell me, like, everything you want to say about imaginary friends.
I think before anything, before we try to understand what an imaginary friend is, we need to understand that we live in a world that is ruled by Satan, and he is the author of all lies. So I'm not saying your child playing with rocks and stones and stuff in the backyard and he's talking to himself is wrong. And this is, there is research that backs it up that 65% of the kids that have imaginary friends are because they're trying to cope with social structure, they're trying to cope with trauma. And this is truth. This is, mm-hmm. and quite frankly, you know, sometimes the best expert that I could ever consult for anything is the voice in my head.
Is yourself, right?
Yeah, it's true. Sometimes
I talk to myself often. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you know who's gonna tell you what you're gonna hear in the most direct way, and that's, you know, your own self. You might be wrong, but
exactly.
So it kind of balls up into like having an alter ego. How I also tap into Trebles Garcia. I'm home. I'm Angel. I speak Spanish. I'm teaching my kids Spanish first, etc., etc. Then when I get into this behind the mic, I am Trebles Garcia. I am that dude. The showman, whatever you want to call them. So kids tap into that also. But like mm-hmm. we were mentioning in before we got into the recording session of this podcast, was that sometimes kids have so much energy before they find out what evil and good are, when they still have that innocence, which could reach out all the way to 9, 10 years old. You never know when they start to really be bad kids, right? And decide mm-hmm. to choose evil before good. Before they become sinners, they have the innocence, and that's an energy that has to be harnessed, and it's always trying to be impacted with evil influences, and it's a target for evil entities. And mm-hmm. I believe more and more that ghosts and spirits in this dimension and realm are not ghosts and spirits. When you die, you go to the waiting room. The things that are roaming around here are also minions and demons that are trying to drag you down, because we live in his domain. We live in Satan's playground. So having said that, I think that observing your child's behavior and making sure that you listen to conversations that they're having with themselves and you don't invite anything in to your home is key, because we also mentioned that you would have to invite the evil in. Give you a quick example. If your child is playing outside, and this is just hypothetically, and they come in like, oh, mom, like, who are you speaking to? Oh, my best friend. You know, he's my imaginary friend. Can he come and eat with us? Bam. Why don't you send him home and we could have dinner with him later at the park? Don't invite him in, because you never know who he is dealing with or what kind of trauma and passion and tears that kid is putting into that, or peace or joy or energetic feels that he's encountering outside at school or being influenced by anybody else.
Right. And I think that's important for people to realize is that demonic spirits prey on the most vulnerable and the most innocent. And so kids are always the target. That's why, you know, and people are going to be like, oh, here's a movie reference. But all the movies reference, you know, demonic possession in children, or not even being possessed, but demonic spirits talking to children. And so your child may be hearing, you know, voices or imagining they're hearing voices or whatever. And it can actually be a demonic presence that is talking to your child.
I have to amplify what you said. And if you look at every children made movie, any children that's directed for the marketing of children, right? I mean, any movie that's directed to children, I'm sorry. The mom's missing, or the dad dies, or
both orphans, parents,
or both parents. Mm-hmm. Almost every Disney movie is missing a father, nuclear family.
Right.
And The Little Mermaid, for example, underage girl sells her soul, wants to be married with an older gentleman, etc., 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 and she's not with her mom. You see what I'm saying, right?
Right.
So it's always trying to normalize that, so that your child thinks that trauma is normal. And having conversations with himself that could influence him to either become bad, sin, kill, et cetera, play that game. Oh, look, that game's so good. The thoughts start trickling. And if you're not there parenting him or her, and you're not there trying to guide that energy, guide their thoughts, and for them to have a chemical balance and an emotional balance, they will treat and they would connect everything, that anything good or anything bad that happens to trauma, and then they'll use that as an excuse to manifest ugly stuff. We like to say on the show, we manifest greatness one episode at a time. We challenge reality one episode at a time. That's what we need you to do also at home. And the only government that you have control over is your very 2 feet, the place that you stand on, the moment that you're in, the moment, and in your home, whoever, you know, your child, your spouse, etc. So yeah, that's what we
start. Amen to that. And you know, it's funny because they have done research on imaginary friends, which they call them ICs, right? Imaginary companions. And the research goes back a very long ways into, you know, things that they were seeing. And when they first started researching this, they said, depending on the study that you read, anywhere from 28 to 65% of children have an imaginary friend. And early thoughts in the research shows that these figures, most of the time, were dangerous, violent, bad thoughts, stuff like that. It was all like dark, creepy stuff. Until 2020, when that changed, because it was wink, wink, debunked, right? Must have been debunked by the fact checkers that we have checking Instagram all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So it was debunked. And it's now a thing where it's healthy, quote, for every child to have an imaginary friend because it's a positive experience. And I found that to be very coincidental that this is evolving at the exact same time that the United Nations is pushing all of this garbage through the Tavistock Institute, through our schools, about sexuality and fetishism and normalizing pedophilia and the whole nine yards. And I thought red flag went up because we're debunking this being bad and we're saying this is positive and follow me down this rabbit hole. But I thought, what a better way for them to tell children, gaslight children, and tell them that they didn't really have a sexual encounter with an adult.
Wow. Right?
Because it was just an imaginary friend. You imagined it the whole time. Isn't it odd that that happened at the exact same time they started pushing all of this stuff?
Transgender stuff. Yeah, well, yes. Normalizing the victim, not having the victim normalize the idea of being sexually molested by an adult, it's in their favor, and it's also in their favor for the predator.
Right.
I mentioned also earlier that in Amazon, there's this movie called Pedophilia, a Mental Illness, I think it's called, mm-hmm. where they're trying to normalize pedophilia for the accuser, the person that's being that's doing the harm. So right. on both ends, and quite frankly, like I mentioned this in the beginning of the show, if you want channel the child's imagination, their power to manifest, the power to create, because they're innocent, mm-hmm. and you normalize that pedophilia in that gap, it may just happen to be real in the next couple of years, where all of us adults, it goes over your head and we start accepting it. Sooner or later, mm-hmm. we're not just going to accept it, we're going to ask for it, because that's what happened with technology. Same thing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go too deep into conspiracies here and just sound like a kook, which I am, but
you're not a kook.
You mm-hmm. know, this could very well lead to you not only accepting it, but also your child manifesting that to happen. I was reading this book on Silke Brown, and she was a medium. She's an author. She's done this book called The Book. One of the first books I read in high school was called Secret Societies, and that's what kind of hooked me even more. And she was talking about how she connected a bunch of other strong people with telekinesis and stuff, right? Which could very, very, very well be real or not, depending how you feel about it. But she gathered mm-hmm. some people in a forest where there was a lot of mist at nighttime, and they were able to manifest Bigfoot in front of them. Now, the reason I'm saying that's because manifestation powers of manifestation are very real. When you verbalize right. victory, it's all frequency. John first says, the first was the word, and the word was God. And I'm not saying that the word was God. Yeah, the word was God, but the word was God. The verbalization mm-hmm. of it. That's why you also, when you proclaim victory, you will get victory. People say that when you say that's going to happen, you cure yourself. When you start saying things about your body that are not very well, when you start joking about yourself, that are things, oh, I'm an idiot, this and that. Your brain does not know you're joking or that you're saying it in a hypothetical form or a metaphor. No, your brain just hears, I'm an idiot. Guess what's going to happen? You become dull. Mm-hmm. You start becoming an idiot slowly, bro.
Right.
And, you know, it's very important to know that there's a very thin line between a manifestation and how kids can really be manipulated through mm-hmm. evil influences. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so this whole thing is very interesting to me because, and I shared this with you before this show, I had an imaginary friend when I was little. Mm-hmm. Don't remember the name now. I named it a female name, but I had a lot of things happen in my childhood, like fragmented family, people close to me dying, like all kinds of very traumatic events. And at one point in time, my parents took me to a Christmas party at the Moose Lodge. And if people don't know about the Royal Order of the Moose, go listen to Occult Rejects, did a really good show on that and what's behind it. But we went to this Christmas party. I was a very young child, like 4 or 5 years old. And I remember going, I remember walking in, we were supposed to get presents and, you know, whatever. And these people, adults, that were dressed like furries, and that means furry animals, right? Foxes or bears or whatever, came to get us, to take us in this room that was just for the children. No other parents were in there. It was just these furry people and these kids. I remember everything up until that door shut in that room. Don't remember anything afterwards.
Uh-huh.
So that's about the same time that I had the imaginary friend show up.
Show up after that?
Yes.
Ah, look at that. Yes. They set your companion up.
Yes.
That's wicked. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've shared this on my show before, but my parents were very like military-esque growing up, right? Mm-hmm. And very old school. And if something was wrong with you, like you didn't show your emotion, don't cry, put your big girl panties on and, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and whatever. And there was a lot of times where I was little where, you know, like my sister would bite me and draw blood or, you know, something of fighting with my brother or whatever the case may be. And it's like, basically shut up. We don't want to hear it. And so those things all happened after this incident at the Moose. And so I think that is what brought this imaginary friend on. That was my coping mechanism because that was somebody to listen to me when my family would not.
It appeared before you.
Yes.
It gave you the peace that you wanted. Yes. You know, it's funny because kids that are going through trauma, and this is what's funny, out of the 65% of the children that are actually having these imaginary friends, 30% of them do not tell their parents they have an imaginary friend. And
right.
It's funny because this is when the teddy bears come in. And the dolls, right? They, oh, that's my best friend. I'm carrying her. Oh, yeah, that's my imaginary friend. They pour so much trauma, so much right. fear, so much emotional energy in there. It could also be good. It's not all bad. I mean, right. I don't want to be a black pill here, but, you know, most of the cases are evil.
Right.
But they pour so much energy into that that it opens up. It's like a divot box. It opens up a portal where now you're not just being influenced, but you're also carrying around this spiritual essence, mm-hmm. that energy. It's a spiritual homunculus that you created,
mm-hmm.
an avatar for these right. demonic entities to manipulate.
Right. 100%. I yeah. absolutely agree with that. And the reason why I say that is because all throughout my childhood, it was bad thing after bad thing after bad thing after bad thing. And it's like a never-ending spider web of stuff, right? And it wasn't until I was an adult where I finally discovered I had some shit attached to me, right?
Whoa.
That I did not want attached to me.
Uh-huh.
That grounding is important. But I had shared with you also that at a very early age, and people have heard me say this before, I'm very empathic. And so, like, you know, feeling people's emotions or feelings or knowing when people are sick. And people have heard me say before that I sometimes would get contacted by what I felt was people that passed away or whatever. Like, my sister died when we were 2 years apart, so we were very close. Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff like that. And so from a very early age, that has always been a thing with me. So it was like, I am like a huge open access portal for whatever.
So you're not close to the idea of being a portal. Yeah.
You had something bad happen to you. Oh, let me comfort you.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a false
trust.
Yeah, but it was like a way to cope, right? And compartmentalize like things that were going on in my life that were not kosher.
Yeah.
Or not real. And I was not a normal child, obviously, thinking I can talk to dead people. So I'm not a medium, don't claim to be one. So nobody get your panties in a bunch.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Put your big girl panties on.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I've never been paranormally activated. I can never say that. And I don't know if this is the right place to share this or the right topic, but you're going to laugh right now, about to tell you.
I'm not going to laugh.
I've seen a fucking leprechaun. Before you laugh.
I'm not laughing.
I was 22 years old. This happened exactly 11 years ago. And it was the middle of the summer. It was a summer night. And I came to work. It was 2 a.m. I was not high on cocaine and cocaine accessories. I promise you. I was not drunk. I wasn't high on weed. I came from work. I threw myself on the bed. I didn't even want to shower. And in my brother's bed, because my brother was in Texas, he went chasing a woman. I seen little, it was a brownie. I seen him because I did my study on what the heck I saw. And I seen the little brownie. He was this tall. His head was bigger than half his body. And dark brown, everything. And we made eye contact for a solid 3-4 seconds. And we just stared at each other. And I was like, what the heck? And he went, boom, boom. He jumped behind. The story of that has been the same. And the way he left the room, the way my dad came out, the way I fell asleep, the way I woke up the next morning, every little detail has been vivid in my head because I've seen what I've seen. Mm-hmm. My mom told me, so my mom was Mexican, and she would tell me, like, I used to see him when I was small, too. And this is my adopted mom. Like, she just, you know, we're not related. It's not genetic. It's nothing that we're all mediums. Mm-hmm. No, none of this. It was just random. And she told me, she goes, they're nice. He let you saw you. They're nice. Don't leave coins. Don't leave anything. He'll get what he wants as an offering. He'll just leave. Then I'm like, what the heck? Never saw him again. So I'm still in search of that freaking elf.
Well, and you know, the funny thing is that a lot of people that have like experiences like that, things manifest to people in different ways because you saw that. I see spirits and stuff. Other people see Bigfoot, you know, mm-hmm. Other people see what they call gray man or something. And it's like these things, whatever you want to call them, appear to everyone very differently. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's like the way that they have to appear for us to understand what it is.
Let me ask you a question with this questions. I have two questions. One, didn't the Bible say that these angels looked weird? Mm-hmm. Check this out. The Bible states that some of these angels and archangels that came down and they presented themselves onto people, they looked to have 1,000 eyes, looked like they had rings and 1,000 wings, etc. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not spitting the scripture exactly right. How it's written, okay? And then you also have areas where a lot of the imaginary friends are not only in teddy bears, but they're also shape-shifting animals. Mm-hmm. Have many animal heads. In the Bible, one of the angels that came down had 4 different heads. It was a bull, I think it was a lamb, an eagle, and a face of a man. Had 3 different heads in one mm-hmm. head. So right. This is all biblical, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm not saying these people had imaginary friends. I'm just saying these things do manifest in front of you depending on what your intent is and what whatever your mental state is, I would think. Mm-hmm. And then my second question to top that one is, Abraham took his child, and correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think the Bible states exactly what age Isaac had, but when he took his son to murder his son to sacrifice of God, it doesn't tell you what happened to Isaac after that trauma. How traumatic would be that experience to have your dad almost slit your throat in the name of a God that you can't see? You see what I'm saying, right?
Well, and that's why like the mental health aspect of imaginary friends is super important because, like you said, you know, a lot of these percentages of kids have had some kind of trauma in their life, whether it's, you know, mental abuse, physical abuse, family dynamic situations, loved ones dying, living through war, terrorism, social circumstances, you know, it can be a lot of the break-ins, shootings, literally all kinds of things can cause people to have traumas. That's why, you know, as a kid, especially like around the age of 5 or 6 years old, uh-huh. which you're very impressionable even from a baby, right? And whatever your parents' actions, tone of voice, whatever, are imprinted on you as an infant. But when you're 5 or 6 years old, that's when it really starts to shape personalities, perceptions, things like that. And so, you know, the mental health portion of this is when you experience these kinds of traumas or, you know, situations in the household or at school, even bullying can cause this. But people tend to disassociate, which is where imaginary friends come in, because it is like a split, kind of like the MK Ultra stuff, right? But it's our own mind doing this.
Which that's what I thought they did to you. They probably seduced you. Not seduced you. Put you to sleep. Sorry, I'm not using the word correctly. And then they, you know, you might be, dude, you never know, man.
Well, and it could be anything because my dad worked for the government. So, you know.
Oh, God.
But, you know, kids, especially when they go through these things, they get dissociative identity disorder. And so that's like a morph of different personalities, at least two different personalities. It's all, that's a big umbrella word, but it also has like multiple personality disorder and stuff like that underneath of it. But it's from hallucinations, delusions, hearing voices, imagining you're talking to somebody when you're not, imagining things happening that didn't, fragmented memories, holes in your timeline of things. It's like you go through a time warp. You don't remember like certain areas of time, or you swear something happened during this time frame that never did. And that's a lot of this imaginary friends ties into several different mental disorders, because DID is very common to have in children because, like I said, we're shaped from infants. And so if you're hearing like people arguing all the time, or people partying all the time, or, you know, gunshots or whatever, that causes you to fragment your memories and create these alternate perceptions.
Let me ask you something, Janet. Mm-hmm. With your background, this kind of, it comes into play with what you said. It encompasses everything together. So you mentioned bullying. Now, I am a strong believer that maybe bullying to an extent, yeah, it's wrong. But I come from an area of the world where you didn't have, like you mentioned earlier about your dad, very materialistic, very strict. You can't complain about shit. Just get it done, right?
Right.
I didn't have the privilege to complain about anything. Mm-hmm. And bullying and being street smart before book smart, it comes as a given. And you said that the cards you were dealt with. And when you have lemonade, I mean, when you have lemons, you make lemonade and you drink it in the shade. Now, a lot of kids nowadays are over-sheltered. And because they're over-sheltered, they behave in even worse patterns than the kids that were bullied back then. And I'm not saying, I'm not condoning bullying. But God damn it, I went through bullying myself, and I haven't murdered anybody in my life.
Right.
And I think that, I don't think spanking, I got spanked a lot when I was a kid.
Me too.
Spanking my daughters was the right thing, or is the right thing. But what is, so the question is to you, what is positive bullying, if such thing exists, and what is positive spanking? Because even spanking causes trauma. Now, I don't want to be all black pill, but what would be the right dose to keep?
I have a very maybe controversial opinion on spanking. I'm a fan of spanking. Ooh. I think a lot of kids nowadays should get their behind swooped. with a belt or a switch or whatever, because I'm old. And so it was like, go out and get this, you know, a branch off the tree, and that's what we're going to swat your butt with. Or, you know, being raised in Catholic school where nuns were still teaching and they had giant, like 2x4s with burr holes drilled in them that they whacked your butt with or broke your knuckles with a ruler or whatever. So my opinion is, I believe in punishing your children. However, I also believe that you need to make it very clear why they are getting punished. Explain to them what they did wrong and explain to them that, you know, actions have consequences because you always have to take responsibility for your actions. Right. And so it's kind of like having a dog, you know, and say the dog tears up your couch cushion or something. But when you get home and you see it, you're like really pissed off and you don't want to deal with it at that time. And so 2 hours later, you come in and try to scold the dog or punish the dog for tearing up the couch cushion. You have to address it immediately when it happens or immediately when you find it. Kids are no different. You cannot, you know, they did something on a Friday and you wait till Monday night to punish them. And then they have no idea what, because kids have very short-term memories, right? And yeah. So they have no idea what they did wrong. So you have to rule with a stern hand, but also be loving in the fact that, you know, what you did has consequences, and that's not appropriate behavior. Because I can tell you, as a parent of two adult children, they were very different personalities growing up. Our son was very easy. Mm-hmm. My daughter was not. Right. And so, like, teaching them right from wrong has always been a thing in our household, and always being truthful with them. And, you know, like me with my daughter when she was growing up, because I was a single parent at the time, it was like I had to be the loving parent, the enforcer, right? The punisher, everything all rolled into one. I'm not doing this because I don't like you. I'm doing this so you'll learn your lesson and won't do this again. And so that's always like a necessary component to let them know that you love them, but they have to understand that what they did was wrong, even though you still love them.
Let me ask you this. I agree with you. 1,000%. I have a 13-year-old daughter. Trust me. My daughter wants money. So my daughter was raised in El Salvador. So I brought her home about 4 years ago. And she's still learning English. So mm-hmm. I give her paragraphs and I tell her, you need to learn them. You need to tell me how they're spelled. You need to tell me, like, I'm teaching her English. And mm-hmm. I'll give you some money. Oh, I'll buy you your next Jordans that you want. She has 18 pairs of shoes. I got two. I don't understand how this happens, but it happens.
happens, especially with girls.
Yeah, I know. So she goes, I want my next Nikes. This episode is not brought to you by Nikes, by the way. I'm just, you know, sharing the story. And there has to be some comedic relief here. She tells me, yeah. And she comes through. She gives me the date. She completes her homework. And then I have to pull out my wallet and give her the money. So I tell her, you have the day you're going to give it to me, and I'm only going to give you one reminder in the middle of the week. If you don't come through, I'm not only going to take away your phone, but mm-hmm. then I'm going to look at you with less trust.
Right.
Because first of all, word, you cannot break your word. You have to be dead on target, because the world is not structured on lying. It's not structured on, I'm going to get my trophy just because I participated.
Exactly. I don't believe in that.
Mm-mm. That's not how life is. The losers lose, the winners win, period. There's a saying from Talladega Nights, this movie from Will Ferrell. I used to be a big fan. If you're not first, you're last. And quite frankly, I don't see it any other way. Yeah, you could be second, you could be third. But who gets, who? If you're a guy, who gets all the girls? The millionaire that won first place. Sorry to tell you. Who, the woman that gets the best position amongst all men, who is it? The woman that got first place. Not the one that got third place. Not the one that got lost right back over there doing drugs. Mm. No. What's the point of being so fucking beautiful if you're going to be an airhead?
Right.
There's no point. You know, Kim Kardashian just recently, and I'm getting all fucking crazy. Kim Kardashian just went on to become a lawyer. I don't know if she got it legally. I don't know if she went to school. But this chick just got herself a degree that makes her a lawyer in California.
That's frightening. Yeah.
Do you know why she became a lawyer? Not because of conspiracy theories, which she did. She's involved in some crazy shit with Trump that I'm not very happy about. That's a different story, different podcast. But she did it because how did she get her millions? By sucking, you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And just because I don't know what kind of subscribers you have, I don't want to, you know, step on anybody's toes. I'm trying to be less explicit than what I am on my show. On my show, I would say the bad word. So her daughters are growing up knowing that she sucked dick to have money.
And right.
The only reason she has money is because she, mm-hmm. right? Okay,
right.
So she had to get a degree. It's a social structure that we all have to apply ourselves to. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell my daughter. I give her the perfect example. I'm like, look, I used to work at a fucking warehouse, Joe. That's what you love. I'm 33 years old. Barely now I'm fucking fulfilling my life. That's what you fucking want? I'm sorry, baby girl. You're not in my time. Not on my watch. Not on
right.
My
and that's, I think that's like our responsibility is to teach them things. And I think that's where a lot of parental breakdown and childhood meltdowns and stuff come from is that parents don't know how to parent. And I say that as an umbrella because a lot of parents didn't have a good role model growing up with their parents.
Yeah,
and so nobody has passed down from generation to generation, like how to be a parent to your children.
Yeah. The Bible talks about that too, a generational curse. Yeah.
Right.
Unfortunately.
And so that is like our responsibility to break those things and to teach them right from wrong and good from evil and, you know, make it so they're safe because a lot of these imaginary friends caused by traumas and situations like that, and even for adults, one of the biggest things you will hear all the time when somebody has some kind of trauma is they don't feel safe. And so whether it's abuse, whether it's hearing someone else get abused, whether it is somebody breaking into the house, gunshots, rape victims, whatever it is, the quote victim, right, is always in an unsafe situation. And that's why people that have PTSD situations will resurface. And it's not so much tied to the original thing as it is just that feeling of unsafe.
You know, always. You know, just recently, and I don't know if anybody remembers this happening, where they locked you fucking down at your house and they put diapers on your face saying that you were going to fucking die. Yeah, you could smell a fart through that diaper. Anyway, mm-hmm. A lot of people died. The point is this. They reversed the word freedom into safety. They completely substituted the definition of freedom into safety. It's right. Not a coincidence what you're telling me right now and how it connects to our daily lives today, how it's impacted right. today. Safety right. is everything for us. And what's more unsafe now? The United States, the streets, every blue state, every single place. I cannot walk down the street without getting gangbanged on or seeing people trying to steal people's things. The only reason I bought a gun in 2020 is because I saw a family, a group of black guys get off a black Suburban and steal a little old Mexican lady groceries from her hand. That's the only reason why I bought a gun.
Mm-hmm.
So safety is key.
Well, yeah. And think about like adults nowadays, which we created a lot of these quote monsters, monster personalities in society that we have right now, because we've always coddled them, codified them. Everybody gets the participation trophy. You're special. You're great at everything. You sing so fantastic, even though it's like screeching nails on a chalkboard, right? So we as a society gaslit all of these people, right? And so they don't feel safe when you don't agree with them. They don't feel safe when somebody wins an election that they don't like or they don't trust. It basically boils down to the whole trust is a safety issue. And people have problems with that because we have never raised these people up appropriately. We were like, there was a missing parent generation, right? Where the iPad or iPod was a babysitter for your kid.
Yeah.
The TV was a babysitter for your kid.
Yeah.
You got a two-parent household, but both parents are working. And so both parents are tired when they came home. They don't have time to talk to their kids about their day or check their homework or what's in their book bag or any of that stuff.
Wow.
Which created what we have now in society. Which, I will say, also lends itself very nicely to, again, mental health issues.
Oh, yeah.
And dissociative disorders because their parents didn't love them. Their parents didn't spend any time with them. They feel like they're invisible. Nobody listens to them. Nobody ever wants to hear what they say. Nobody cares what happens to them. And so you have all of these people in our society now that are all fragmented and they all has the same dissociative personality disorder. Everybody. It can be short term or it can be a thing that is progressive into things like schizophrenia.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the perfect example. I believe I'm the fucking best. My name is Triple Scarcy. You know? Anyway, I have to amplify what you said. And let me tell you this. Let me show you the other spectrum of that. You said a nuclear family falling apart with it in front of you.
Right.
Now you have the nuclear family falling apart because there was. So in the 1970s, I did an episode on Yayo, which is, you know, Novocaine, cocaine, and the era of coke in LA. And they would literally, the CIA literally dropped care packages. I'm talking about not like a weapons cache. It was a coke cache.
Right.
On in the middle of the city and have people distribute the drug.
Right.
And make it into, they would have the, you know, the ghetto and they would crack, they would make it into crack cocaine. And then you had the same drug in Beverly Hills. So they're comparing Compton and Beverly Hills here, where the coke was used by white folks in Beverly Hills and the same amount was used as crack in Compton. Now you have the deal where it's the same city, it's the same, you know, it's within the same county. Now you have the deal where if the cops stopped you in Beverly Hills for a lid or for $20 worth of coke, you get a slap on the wrist, probably a ticket, your car impounded. But if you go to the ghetto and you found a black dude with that same amount of coke or crack in his pocket, he would get taken and put in jail and put in, it's not something racial here. This is fact. They would take him and put him in jail for 15 to 20 years.
Right.
And then what happened to his kid? His kid was raised off welfare with no dad. And the only thing that he found, the only family he had to comfort him was imaginary friends and gang bangers, prostitutes, and more crack cocaine. And guess what happened to the generation after that and after that? Even worse. Now we live in a welfare state
where
everybody is affected by the free giving of the government, and not only and not only money, but also drugs, because there's a Planned Parenthood in the where's the Planned Parenthood located? In the fucking ghetto.
I think all the time, this,
right? That's the most you'll find probably one in North Hollywood and 1,800 in Compton.
Right.
Know? It's
exactly.
Yeah.
And it is purposeful, and not only is it, you know, that, but it's also the healthcare system. Get your government insurance and they're partnered with the drug companies. And so filling you full of medications. And so back in the old days when they were, you know, researching and investigating this imaginary friend syndrome, they would consider these people that had imaginary friends as mentally ill, and there would be, you know, medications, shock therapy treatments, putting people in, you know, schools for the disabled or mental institutions or whatever, because it's like, this is not normal. This is not a normal part of society. We have caused this fracture. We have caused this to happen because we are so absent from birth with our children, you know. And what is it you hear a lot of times? Don't pick up your kids. Don't, you know, if they're crying in the crib, leave them there. Let them cry it out. Trauma. Don't fall asleep. And so all of that, because that is the time when the babies need you the most to form that bond and form that attachment with love attached to it. So they feel safe and they feel the love and stuff. So if you just leave them in the crib and, you know, let them cry for 6 hours until they fall asleep, they already get those imprinted emotions that you do not care.
Can I add to that? I mean, look.
Yes.
You opened the door to something that I'm very passionate about. The reason I don't speak with my family today is because they believe in the idea of having a kid and then falling into depression, which can very, very might well happen. Mm-hmm. But how weak are you to give birth to your child and put depression over your child's love? I'm sorry to tell you, but no. Mm-hmm. Look, I've been depressed all my fucking life. And right. Now as soon as my child was, as a man, I could tell you this right now. When my babies were born, I was numb. I didn't feel any love for my daughters. Yet, I had a sense of responsibility that I got to wake up. I got to feed them. I got to stay with them. I got to hibernate with them. I got to, you know, I got to provide. I got to profess. I got to protect. The three P's, right? Even though now I'm in love with them. Don't get me wrong. I was like, oh, damn, I'm a dad. It hit me, right? But, like, depression doesn't come over my love for them.
Like, I just want to say what you said. Let me clarify for listeners so they don't get their panties in a bunch. What he's saying is he didn't have that where the women do, where the women are carrying the babies, right? So we instantly have that nesting and that nurture nature thing. Men don't instantly have that as a general rule because you're not carrying the baby inside your body.
Yeah, yeah, that's fact.
And women are nurturers, men are providers.
Yeah.
So anyway.
But I mean, we're all different. We're all different. So, right. You know, other men can take it. But like the reason I'm talking again with my family members, especially the women, is because when they have their kids, they had what's that
thing? Postpartum depression.
Yeah, dude, what? That exists? When did that ever start? Like, what?
Well, it started whenever the medical industry that does the DSM-5 diagnosis coding for everybody on the planet. When they said it started. And so they created a condition and then put a name on it.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was designed. Again, hey, check this out. It connects to what you said. Leave the kid in the crib, right? Makes them, disconnects them from the mom. And then you go into postpartum depression, then disconnects you from your son or daughter. See what I'm saying? It works both ways again.
Right. And think about this, too. People that are suffering with that, and this is going to sound harsh, but this is the way it is. You are so consumed and so center focused on yourself. You're being selfish because you're not taking care of something that you just gave life to that needs your assistance, but you're focused inward on you only.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem that we have in our population as a whole, is that we live through our ego instead of through our soul, because we as a human race are very self-centered. Absolutely. And we would rather, you know, take care of ourselves than take care of something else. Or someone else.
Yeah, every day. And you're absolutely right. And sometimes it's kind of a reflection to myself, with myself as well. So everybody has to do some work and be vigilant. Mm-hmm. Make sure you pay attention to what your kids are watching and doing, and who they're talking to. And it's they are the future. Be more like children, God said.
You know, amen to that. And and he loves children, you know. And so for us to like say it's okay or it's normal to like fracture our kids emotionally into the state where they have to have imaginary friends to learn to cope and deal with life, we're falling down as adults. We're falling down as parents, and we're not giving up our end of the bargain and what we should be doing. Because in a healthy, normal, loving household, you shouldn't have an incident like that. So if the number was 65%, imagine how many of those homes are broken, or if that number is actually underreported.
Absolutely. Or, yeah, they won't tell you because they probably don't have the way to really measure, or they're lying to you. They don't want you to know the truth.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, my dear, I love you to pieces. I'm so tickled pink that we met, that we get to spend time together. I would love to do a whole nother show with you.
I'm honored.
Because I have some things, yeah, that I want to ask you about and talk to you about. So tell the listeners again where they can find you at.
Again, thank you so much for having me. My name is Tribbles Garcia. You can find me at paranoidradio.com. Check us out on Instagram, Paranoid Radio. And we are shadow banned. So if you can, I'll drop a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It allows other people to enjoy the show as much as I enjoy making it. Paranoid Radio Podcast is absolutely free. I don't make a dime off of it. I get a joy just to do the research and then give it to you. And by all means, I'm not saying that I am right. We encourage everybody to hashtag look it up, hashtag búscalo. That is the saying. And I did copyright it. So F you guys, you can't do that. You can't say that. But I encourage all of you guys to do your own research. It takes literally 5 seconds to go onto your search bar and search what you're looking for. Do not let the computer use you. Do not let the internet use you. Do not let the mainstream media tell you how you're going to live your life. By all means, don't even let me tell you how to live your life. Do the research yourself. Follow your gut. Read the Bible from time to time and try to be the best version of you on a daily basis. If you already reached your goals, go harder. If you reach the next level, go harder, okay? If everybody's looking upon you to be an influential person, go harder. There's no reason why you should stall. There's no reason why you should be dull. There's no reason why you should just sit there and wait for things to fall on your lap. He who helps himself will be helped by me. God gives to the people that are trying to help themselves. Help yourself. You have everything inside of you. You have all the potential. You are a divine creation. You have all that energy, all that power. You are limitless. Use that. Put it to work on a daily basis. Work on your body. Work on your family. And focus. And check us out at paranoidradio.com.
Amen to that, brother. And I will add to that real quick. And make sure that while you are doing that, that you are giving thanks for what you have. And that you help other people in any way possible, even if it's to pick up the phone if somebody needs to chit chat about their day or their life. Just be there for someone and be present. So I love you dearly. Thank you so much for joining me. It's always a pleasure. Going to come on your show again here soon, and it's going to be a banger because I got some info for you.
Oh man. So, I'm ready for it. I'm excited.
So thank you guys for tuning in. Love you dearly. And we will see you next time. Have a great one.